Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chagiga Daf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah on the second wide line of Daf Chof Vov. If you prefer, you can count 15 lines down from the top of the Omid, and you will see where we're beginning. The Mishnah. Hagaboyim shenichnesu l'soich habayis. Gaboyim are treasurers. These are Jews that are entrusted by the king to collect taxes. And in order to collect the taxes, at times they have to enter people's houses in order to take some item as collateral until they actually pay the taxes. And this involves their handling and moving around all kinds of vessels and items that are in the citizen's house. So these gaboyim, these are the tax collectors that entered people's houses. V'chein haganovim, shehichziru es hakelim. Likewise, thieves that came to return, they are penitent thieves that came to return the stolen items. Ne'monim loimar lo noganu. These categories of people, the gaboyim and the penitent thieves, are believed to say that we did not touch. They didn't touch this and didn't touch that, and hence the tahara of those items will be maintained. Ubiushalayim ne'monim al hakodesh. And when it comes to issues of sacrifices, they are believed with regard to matters that concern kodesh sacrifices, but not with regard to matters that concern truma. Rashi points out that this Mishnah is a continuation of the beginning of the Mishnah Daf Chof Dalamid Beis, which pointed out the stringencies that you find by Truma over Kodesh. So the Gaboyim and the Ganovim are believed with regard to Kodesh and not with regard to Truma matters in general. Ubishas HaRegel, during the holiday season, during the holidays, Af Al HaTruma, they would be believed even with regard to Truma, and hence maintain the Tahara of those vessels that are used with Truma. The Gemara now raises a contradiction. V'Rominhi, Hagaboyim Shenichnesu L'Soch Habayis, Habayis Kulo Tomei. Very clear contradiction. The Gaboyim, the tax collectors that entered the house, the entire house is Tomei. All the vessels in the house are considered Tomei. The assumption is that the Gaboyim touched and moved all of the vessels. We should point out, marking-wise, this is the dashed underlining that you see here. Kulo Tomei is in contrast with the dashed underlining in the Mishnah, where it said Ne'emonim, that they're believed in what they say they did not touch. Nevertheless, we have to resolve these two sources. Lo kashi, the Gemara says there is no contradiction. Ha di'ika nochri bahadayu, ha deleka nochri bahadayu. Again, we're dealing with Jewish tax collectors. The difference between these two sources is dependent on was there a Gentile with them or not. If there was a nochri with them, so they would not be believed to say that they didn't touch this and didn't touch that. Simply being that if the Jewish tax collectors accompanied by a Gentile in the mission of collecting, they would be afraid not to do a thorough search. So that if there was a Nochri with them, you can rest assured out of the fear of their being accompanied by the Nochri, they would have in fact touched everything. If they are alone, they're not being supervised by the Nochri, so when, we can believe them when they say that they may have entered the house, but they will tell you this we did, this we touched, and this we didn't touch. Disnan, the source bears this out. Im yesh nochri mohem, if the gabai, the tax collector, was accompanied by the Gentile, Nemonim Lomar, they would be believed to say, Lo Nichnasu, we didn't enter this house. We didn't enter this house at all. Avol Ein Nemonim Lomar Nichnasnu Avol Lo Noganu. But they would not be believed to say that we entered, but we didn't touch. Because once they enter, that's a sign that this house owes money. And if they owe money, so there's going to be a thorough search to discover where that money is so that they would be able to collect it. The Gemara asks, V'chi iko nochri badayo mai have? Here the Gemara is asking a question, but sometimes we are guilty in over-explaining things. And here the Gemara is going to ask something that we've already answered. But if there is a Nochri with them, so what difference does that make? Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, these two Amoraim, each one explains, Chadomar, Emas Nochri Alehem. The fear of the Gentile is upon the Jewish tax collector, fearing that he would be punished, whether it be a physical punishment or financial fine for not having done a thorough job. The Chadomar, Emas Malchus Alehem. The other opinion is that there is the fear of the government upon them. And Rashi says, Emas Malchus, Shemol Yalshin Aleim Nochri Eitzla Melech. The fear that the Nochri that's with them will squeal, will tell the king that this Jewish tax collector did not do his job efficiently. According to the Emas Nochri Pshat, it's fear from the Nochri himself that's accompanying them. The Emas Malchus Pshat, the explanation is based on the fear of government retribution. My binayu, what is the difference between these two explanations? Iko binayu, nochri sheino choshuv. The difference would be a Gentile that doesn't have standing in the eyes of the government. So a nochri sheino choshuv, a nochri that's insignificant. So we say that, according to Rashi, maybe my explanation was not 100% accurate, but he's a nochri that's not of significance. So Rashi says there that he himself would pose a fear to the Jew. That is not the case. Apparently, if he's not choshev, if he's lacking significance, so he is not going. This nochri would not take the initiative of meeting out punishments, whether it be fining or physical punishments. He lacks the standing in order to do that. However, there is a fear, though, that this insignificant Nochri will nevertheless squeal to the government. And even if he's Eino Choshev, his word still will be heard by the authorities, and they, the authorities, could still take action. So, we have two explanations as to why, when the Nochri is with the Gabai would not be believed to say that I entered but didn't touch this and didn't touch that. V'chein haganovim shechziru es hakelim. The penitent thieves, we saw that in our Mishnah that they are believed when they say that they didn't touch various vessels. Of course, all of this discussion is coming on the heels of our previous Dapim, where we spoke about the lack of believability that we grant Ami Oretz, certainly regarding their own items. Here, we're dealing with people that in general might not be trustworthy with regard to Tumas and Taras. However, we're dealing with their contact with someone else's items. So the Mishnah said that the Ganovim that are believed to say when they come to return vessels, after they return vessels, we entered surreptitiously, we, however, did not touch everything in the house. V'rominhi, Aganovim shenichnasu l'soch habayis, thieves that entered a house, eino tame elo mokom drisas ragle aganovim. The only, the area that they walked over, that they had trampled, only that area is tumei. However, what we see here is that the area that in fact they did walk over, the vessels that were in that immediate vicinity will have become tumei. And Rashi adds, let's look at Rashi together. Elo Mokum Jesus Ragli Ganovim. Rashi, a line or two down from where we are, he says, Mikomokum Jisoso Miha Tomei. The area that they traversed is, however, Tomei, meaning the vessels in that area. Vekolshekin Kalim Shigonvu Vichira. And certainly the vessels that they had stolen and returned. The Gemara. Yeah, so we have to resolve this. On the one hand, our Mishnah says that Ganovim, that returned vessels, are trustworthy to say that we didn't touch them. You might ask, how could that possibly be that they didn't touch them? So that's a technicality that we can answer. First of all, we have to deal with trying to resolve these two sources. Are Ganovim a suspect of creating Tumah or not? Now, according to our Mishnah, they don't appear to be suspect, and according to this source, they appear to be suspect. So, Omar of Pinchas Mishmei de Rav, or there's another Girsa Mishmei de Rabah, Kesha'asu Tshuva, when they are penitent, so then they are believed. Daikonami, Daikotani, by Daiko means by careful reading of the Mishnah, you can see that that in fact is the situation. As it says, Sheikh Ziru Esakalim, these are thieves that came to return the vessels, Shmamina. So the Rashi points out, Kishosu Tshuva, when they came to be penitent and return the items they stole, Umachmas Tshuva Ichzirum, because of the desire of penitence, they returned the vessels, Hilkoch Lo Meshakri, therefore they're not going to lie. So whatever story the penitent thief tells us regarding their contact with different vessels, you can believe their story, you can rely on them. However, a simple errant individual, he is out to do no good. So what kind of believability could you possibly grant him? So that's what we said, that in those cases where you have a simple thief that came into a house, the area that you can track down that he walked through, the vessels in that vicinity are tomei. We continue in the Gemara, Uv Yerushalayim Ne'emonim Al HaKodesh Tana. The Brisa expands on the Mishnah, Ne'emonim al Kli Cheres Gasim L'Kodesh, and Rashi adds, and certainly on the thin-walled vessels. This is a topic we touched on in our previous year. The vessel salesmen are believed concerning the thick-walled clay vessels for use with sacrifices, and certainly on the thin-walled vessels. The Kol Kach Loma, why do we grant them believability? She'ein Oisin Kivshoinois B'Yerushalayim. We don't manufacture these vessels in Yerushalayim because we don't make Kivshonos, our kilns or furnaces in which clay vessels are fashioned. And as a result of that, you would not be able to access. You would have no vessels for use if you don't believe the kadorim, the people that sell these vessels in Yerushalayim. Ubishas horegel afal atruma, and during the holiday times we grant them believability even with regard to the use of these vessels with truma. Truma is the tithe that one separates from his produce, giving to Kohanim. This produce must be maintained in a state of taharov, purity. Mino hani mili. From where do we know that on the regel we have a special allowance and we accept the words of the Amoratsim regarding their vessels? Omar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi di Omar Kro. Rabbi Shua quotes the pasuk that says, "Vayesof kol ish Yisrael el ha'ir ki ish echad chaverim." The drasha on this pasuk is, "Hakosuv ason kulon chaverim." The Pusik is considering all members of Klal Yisrael. The Pusik is saying everyone gathered together. Everyone is has gathered together and are considered chavirim, are considered trustworthy with regard to matters of Tahara. When do you have everyone gathering together? That is descriptive of the holiday time. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah itself, we glance at the side under our topic heading, the Nosei. Devarim shoyu lohem cheskas taro b'schus haregel ma dinom achar regel. Things that had a status of purity, non-defilement, because of the holiday, what status do they have, those very same items, after the holiday? The Mishnah. Haposeach es chaviso. A chover, a person who is careful with regard to trumas and with regard to tahara matters, he opened a barrel of wine for the sale of its contents. And Rashi points out, and let's read the Rashi together. You can see on the at the beginning of the Mishnah commentary, at the end of the narrow lines, Haposeach es chaviso, chover, a diligent person with regard to these matters of purity, Sheposach es chaviso, Nimkor Yain Bishlam, he opened his barrel, the barrel that up till now was a sealed barrel, and now he's opening it for sale of its wine content, in Yushlaim Boregel, on the holiday. Everyone who comes, they handle it, they touch it. And even the ignoramuses who have a tumah status during the rest of the year, they too are handling the barrel and the wine content. We continue in the Mishnah, so we've described what Posech es Chavito is, and V'hamaschil b'isoso al gav regel, someone who starts preparing dough for the holiday. Reb Yehuda Omer Yigmor. Reb Yehuda says that you can finish the wine and finish the dough and sell it as having a tohor status even after the holiday. Bearing in mind that during the holiday, no one disagrees that all of this, even though the Amaratzim, the people that in general have a Tomei status, are touching it, everyone agrees that during the holiday itself, the items have a status of Tahara. Here the question is, what status do they have after the holiday? And we're not speaking necessarily, we're not speaking about a case where the Amaratzim are continuing to handle it after the holiday. We simply want to know what is the status of these very items that were handled during the holiday by Amaratzim. What is their Tahara status after the holiday? So Reb Yehuda says you can finish off the barrel that had been opened or the dough that had been prepared during the holiday. You can finish it off after the holiday with the Tohor status. Rashi adds that Rabbi Yehuda is featured in Maseches Beitza as presenting things that if you don't allow them at the end, or if you're not lenient with regard to their status at the end, they won't even begin. In other words, if a person knows that his barrel that would be handled by Amaratzim during the holiday will be declared as Tomei after the holiday, he's not going to open it up. He's not going to make it available to the public at the very outset. And that would be a loss to the tzibur. This is called, in Talmudic terminology, hitiru sofan mishum tchilasan. We make allowances, leniences at the end in order to motivate the action at the beginning. That's as far as Reb Yehuda is concerned. V'chachomim oimrim lo yigmor. The chachomim say that there is retroactive tumah that sets in. True, during the holiday, we granted the wine and the dough, even though it was handled by the Amaratzim, we declared it Tohor. But after the holiday, retroactively, we say that it is Tomei. We continue in the Gemara. Yosef, Rav Ami, Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, Akilud, Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak were sitting at the entrance to the Kila, sometimes it's translated as a porch or an entrance to Rav Nafcha's house. Pasachad the Omar, one said, according to the Rabbonon of our Mishnah. These are comments that are focused according to Rabbonon that say the Taharos status of the holiday does not continue till the time period after the holiday. And they ask, or they raise the following point. One said, Pasachad the Omar, Maushiani Chenu le Regel Acher. So one raised the question, can it be left to till the next holiday? Omerle idoch, the other one responds, Yad HaKol Mimashmish in Bob, Ad Amos Yanichenu L'Regel Acher. You're asking about leaving it over till the next holiday, and in the meantime, it's being handled during the time period between one holiday and the next holiday. It's being handled by all kinds of people, and you're suggesting that you can leave it over to the next holiday and expect it to remain tor. Omar Le, so the first one who raised the question responds and says, "Otu ado idno lav hakol mimashmishin bo." And up till now, is it not so that everyone was in fact handling it during the holiday, and you allowed it during the holiday, even though it was being handled by all, including the Amaratzim? Omar Le, so the other one responds, "Hochi hashta." How can you compare the points? The points of during the holiday it was being handled to the suggestion of leaving it over to the next holiday, and during the interim period it's being handled by all kinds of people. Bishlamo ad ho idno tumas amos beregel. I understand very well that up till the holiday ends, in other words, during the holiday itself, the rabbinic automatic tuma status imposed on Amaratzim is something that Rachmona Tihara, the Torah recognizes it as being a non-problem, as being Tohor. Elohashto Tameohi, but now during the time period after the holiday, you don't have that Torah allowance. Therefore, he says, I'm sorry, you can't suggest leaving it over from one holiday till the next holiday. The interim period, it will be handled by Amaratzim, and expect that by the next holiday we'll still declare it Tohar. There's a difference between handling that takes place during the holiday and handling that takes place after the holiday. Neimo Kitanoi, can we say that the issue between these two Amoroyim, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, in fact parallels an earlier Machlokes Tanoim? Before we continue in the Gemara, on the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivneh, because shortly you'll see triangles appearing, and we note that these triangles represent Shlavim Lahazbir Shnei Brises Sosros Benosei Hanal. We're going to present two Tanaic sources very briefly here, and they seem to be contradictory, and we're going to try to resolve them. So we're going to go through several stages in attempting to resolve these two sources. So can we say that the issue between the two Amoroyim is a Machlokes Tanoim? The Toni Chada, one source says, Yanicheno, the regel acher, leave the wine and the dough till the next holiday. V'tanya idoch, lo yanicheno, the regel acher. The other source says, don't leave it till the next regel. Regel is the holiday. My lav, Tanoi hi. Is it not so that the resolution between these two sources is, in fact, to be understood as representing two opinions, one saying that leaving it over till the next holiday will be beneficial and it will regain a status of Tara, and the other opinion saying it won't help? Lo, the Gemara says, no, that's not the resolution of these two sources. Ha dekotoni yanichena, the one that says leave it over till the next holiday, Rebbe Yehuda, that represents Rebbe Yehuda. We saw Rebbe Yehuda in the Mishnah that says once you open it up during the holiday, you can finish it off after the holiday. The Tanya Idoch, the other source that says, correction in the reading, the source that says you can't leave it over till after the holiday and expect it to remain tar, that is Rabbanan. Let us pause for a moment and just go back for the sake of accuracy. At stage one, where triangle one appeared, it said, my love, Tanoihi, we were attempting to say at that point that these two brises, Tanichado and the Tanidoch, are both brises within the opinion of the Rabbonan. As we emphasized at the beginning of this section of Gemara, that Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Nafcha were conducting their discourse within the opinion of the Rabbonan that said that you can't merely leave it over till after the holiday and expect it to be tohar during the period after the holiday. So that we're saying that the two Tanaic sources are within the opinion of the Rabbanan. That's at the first stage, the triangle number one, that there's a machlokes tanoim within the opinion of the Chachomim. Will leaving it over till the next holiday be of any benefit? Stage two, at this point the Gemara says, no, there isn't a machlokes tanoim within the Chachomim. Rather, these two Tanaic sources represent two different opinions. One, the source that says, leave it over till the next holiday, that's Rebbe Yehuda. And the source that says, it's not going to help leaving it over to the next holiday, that is the Rabbanan. So the two brises here represent two different Tanaic opinions, not two different earlier Tanaic opinions. It's not two opinions within one Tana. The Gemara asks, well, are you then telling me that the source that says Yanichena, leave it over till the next holiday, is Rebbe Yehuda? Fetisbara, you have to explain yourself, though. V'ha Rebbe Yehuda Yigmor Ka'amar. Rebbe Yehuda says that after this holiday, you continue using it after the holiday. Rebbe Yehuda doesn't say leave it over till the next holiday. He says something different. In fact, it might very well be that according to the lenient source between these two Tanoim, his leniency is only that you can leave it over till the next holiday, but during the period after the holiday, after the first holiday, he's not saying it will have a status of Tahara, whereas Rebbe Yehuda says that the status of Tahara that was gained during, or that was imposed during the holiday, actually continues after the holiday. So they don't seem to match. The source that says that Yanichena Ragel Acher doesn't seem to match what Rebbe Yehuda said in the Mishnah. And that's what the Gemara's question is. Rebbe Yehuda Yigmor Ka'amar. Rebbe Yehuda doesn't say Yanichena, he says Yigmor, finish it. Finish it now after the holiday. Ela, rather, stage three. Ha Dikotoni Lo Yanichena, the source that says, don't leave it over till the next holiday, is in fact, that's Rebbe Yehuda. That's Rebbe Yehuda, the Hadikotoni Yanichena Rabbonan. And the source that says, leave it over till the next holiday, is in accordance with the Rabbonan. Umay lo Yanichena. What does Rebbe Yehuda mean when he says, don't leave it over? Shein Tzorich Lahanicha. You don't have any need to leave it over till the next holiday in the hopes of only then regaining a Tahara status. Even now, right after the holiday, the barrel that you opened for the first holiday continues its Tahara status after the holiday. The Mishnah. We glance at the side where we have a topic heading which reads Tihur Klei Beis HaMikdash Li'achar Regel. The need for purifying vessels, for undefiling them, the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, after the holiday. During the holiday, all of Klal Yisrael assembled in the Beis HaMikdash, and all of Klal Yisrael includes Amaratzim, people that have a status of Tumah, rabbinic, assumed status of Tumah, rabbinically speaking. And during the pilgrimage and the crowds in the Beis HaMikdash, a lot of vessels are going to be handled by who knows who handled what. So after the holiday, there is a need for purification. Let's not confuse this with the status of the vessels during the holiday, where we said that Tumas Amoretz, the tumah that we generally assume to be upon Amaratzim is suspended during the holiday. The Mishnah. Misha'ova haregel mavirin al taras azara. After the holiday, that means we pass over all the vessels, we move the vessels from one spot to another in order to immerse them and purify them from the tumah of Amaratzim that happened to handle them during the holiday. True, as we said before, even though during the holiday we don't ascribe tumah to the vessels, by virtue of the pasuk that we saw cited before, Vayesav Kol Yisrael, Kol Ish Yisrael Eliyu Kish Echod Chaverim, but nevertheless, after the holiday, retroactively, tumah sets in. Ovar Horegel Liyom Shishi, if the holiday ended on a Friday, Lo Hoyu Mavirin, the purification process would not take place, mitnei kvod haShabbos. The Kohanim, who were generally in charge of this, had to get ready for Shabbos, so we didn't trouble them to do the purification if the holiday ended on a Friday. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af lo biyom chamishi, she'ein haKohanim penuyim. The opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is one that extends this leniency, or this provision by another day, meaning that even if the holiday ends on a Thursday, we're not going to engage in the Tevilah until after Shabbos. We need to be a bit more accurate in what we just explained. The Tanakama that said Ovar HaRegel Yom Shishi, that really means not that the holiday ended on a Friday, because if that were the case, obviously you're not going to engage during the holiday itself in immersing the vessels, but rather the holiday ended on a Thursday, where you had an interim single day of Friday for possibly engaging in the purification process. And the Mishnah said we don't trouble the Kohanim on that Friday, that one, let's say, weekday between the holiday and the Shabbos, for Tahara. And Rabbi Yehuda extends that by one day, meaning even if the holiday ended on a Wednesday, where there's a Thursday and Friday, even that is too much pressure and trouble on the Kehanim, so we delay this purification process till after Shabbos. The Gemara presents a brisa which explains why. What is it about the Kohanim's schedule that made it such that they were not available? The Mishnah said she'ena Kohanim penuyim. The end of the Mishnah, that they weren't available. Tana she'ena Kohanim penuyim milahoitzi bedeshen. When the holiday ended, it ended on a, we'll say on a, if it ended on a Wednesday, according to Rabbi Yehuda, or if it ended on a Thursday, according to the Tanakama, the interim day between the holiday that ended and Shabbos was used, that interim day was used for carrying out, or say cleaning the altar off of all of the accumulated ash from the multitudes of sacrifices that had been offered during the holiday. The altar needs to be cleared off, and the amount that had accumulated on the Mizbeach, forming a mound, it's called a tapuach, literally an apple, it's a heap, there's a rounded look to it. This required an investment of a lot of time, and hence they were simply not available for purifying the vessels of the temple. Now, Rashi on the Mishnah, and we had explained this in passing, according to Rashi on the Mishnah, the Kohanim seem to be preoccupied with their own household needs of getting ready for Shabbos. The Braisa suggests that the Kohanim preoccupation was cleaning off the cleaning off the top of the Mizbeach. Whether this requires some type of resolution or between the Rashi explanation of the Mishnah and the Braisa, we're simply including all the Kohanim that would have otherwise been available. They're simply not available. We continue now in the Gemara with the next Mishnah. Ketzad ma'avirin al taras azara. How is this purification to be done? Matbilin es hakelim shoy b'mikdash. We immerse the vessels that were in the Beis HaMikdash. The Omrin lohem, and we tell kohanim that are amaratzim. We tell them on the holiday, hizharu, be careful. We continue at the top of Amud Beis, shelo tigu b'shulchan. Be careful, don't touch the table in the heichal that contained the 12 shoebreads, the lechem haponim. Well, why were they warned, don't touch it after all? So they're, even though they're amaratzim, but during the holiday they don't create tumah. And it's, and after the holiday we're going to metire anyway. So Rashi explains that the shulchan is something that could not have been immersed after the holiday because it cannot be moved from its spot. Rashi, of course, foreshadowing the Gemara, there is a pasuk that says lechem ponim lefonai tamid, that the showbreads must always be on location, so that there is no possibility of taking the shulchan, which always has breads on it, to be removed from the echal and brought to immersion in a mikvah. So we want to preempt any problem by ordering the kohanim amaratzim, don't touch the shulchan. We continue. Kol hakelim shoy b'mikdash, all the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash, yesh lahem shnim u'shlishim, they have backup vessels, two sets, three sets of these vessels exist. Sheim nitmeu harishonim, if the original set of vessels becomes tame, yaviu shniim tachteim, we would bring the replacement ones so that there would be no pause in the service. Kol hakelim shebemikdash tun tvila, all the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash require immersion. Chutz mi mizbeach hazov u'mizbeach hanechoshes, with the exception of the altars, the golden altar which was used for incense offerings, and the copper altar which was in the courtyard of the Mishkan, which have these mizbechos, these altars have the status mipneshem kekarka, divrei Rebbe Elazar. They have the status of karka means ground, earth. The ground, or things that are attached to the ground, are not subject to absorbing tuma. That's Rebbe Elazar's explanation as far as the Mizbeach Hazov and the Mizbeach Nechoshes as not absorbing tuma. V'chachomim omrim mitnei shein mitzupin. Now this is a very difficult phrase. The Gemara is going to change it later, but translated it means they do not absorb tuma because they are coated with metal. In fact, we'll see later on that being coated with metal, if anything, is a reason for yes absorbing tuma, not like it says over here. But that's here's a case where the Gemara has to refine that which appears in the Mishnah. We continue now with a topic heading on the side of the Gemara, Machlokes bein Mishnosenu Braisa. We'll see a controversy between our Mishnah and a Tanaic source, im mitarin es haminor. Was there the need for purifying the menorah, the candelabra, that the seven-branch candelabra that sat in the Heichal section of the Beis HaMikdash? Tana, hizaru, shemo tigu b'shuchon uva menorah. Here you have a Tanaic source where the Kayanim Amaratzim are warned not to touch the table nor the candelabra. The Tana di Don, my time alo, Toni menorah. Our Tana, why did he not mention a warning against the touching on the part of the Amaratzim of the menorah? Answer: Shulchan ksiv bei tamid, menorah lo ksiv ba tamid. Regarding the shulchan, the Torah says, and we cited the pasuk that was quoted in Rashi, lechem aponim lefonai tamid. The bread must always be in my presence. And in my presence is a reference to its location in the Heichal. So it must always, the shulchan must always be there. Regarding the menorah, the word tamid does not appear. The idach, according to the Braisa, kevon dechtiv es hamenorah noichach ha-shulchan, since the Torah describes the position of the menorah as being opposite the shulchan, these vessels were in the Heichal of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, and the Torah says that the menorah must be opposite the Shulchan. Keman dechsiv bo tamid domi. It's as if the word tamid appears regarding the menorah as well. Since tamid appears by the Shulchan, and the menorah must be opposite the Shulchan, just like the Shulchan is not to be moved from location, likewise the menorah. The idach, according to our Mishnah, that said only the shulchan is not to be moved, but the menorah can be moved, and hence there was no need to warn the amaratzim. What about the pasuk that we just read? Hahu likbo lo mokum hudasa. The pasuk that says es menorah nochal shulchan isn't describing the non-movement of the menorah; it's simply telling us where the menorah is to be placed in the normal course of events. Namely, it is placed opposite the Shulchan. The Shulchan was on the northern quadrant of the Heichal, and the menorah was opposite in the south. But as far as the restriction upon its being moved, not true with regard to the menorah, only so with regard to the Shulchan. That, once again, is according to our Mishnah. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a note on the side, a nosei, mivneh heading. Triangles will appear in the course of this presentation in opposite directions. The note says on the side, Shnei Gishos, there are two approaches, the Inyan Kabolas Tuma Lashulchan, regarding the Tuma that would have affected the Shulchan. Number one, Shelo Tekabel Tuma, there is a suggestion in the Gemara that it should not be Mekabel Tuma, Midin Kli Eitz Ha'osui Lenachas. So the first triangle suggests an approach that would counter the spirit of the Mishnah and the Braisa, in which we see that the Shulchan, according to the suggestion, should not be subject to Kabbalah's Tumah, based on the principle of Kli Eitz Ha'osui Lenachas. Literally, wooden vessels that are made for permanent positioning. Nachas means for non-movement, made to remain where they are. The Torah speaks about vessels in general and their ability to become tomei. Metal vessels, for example, are taught separately in a separate section from wooden vessels. There is a pasuk that speaks about wooden vessels, and wood as a vessel material is taught together with other materials, including sack. Sack is sackcloth. It's made from bags that are made from the hair of goats. The purpose of a bag, obviously, is so that when it's full, you can carry it around. It would be counterproductive to make a bag that's so large that when you fill it up, you can't move it. So wood is taught in the same context as sack, as sack material. And just like sack, which interestingly, even in English, it has the same connotation, as its name indicates, a sack. Just like sack is something that is moved mole verekon, not only when it's empty is it movable, but even when it's full, it is movable. So too, wooden vessels that have the same characteristic, that are movable. However, if you have a wooden vessel that, for whatever reason, either because of its size, when full you can't move it, or it's made to be permanently located in a specific location, so it's not movable. It doesn't conform to the requirements necessary for kabbalas tuma, for absorbing defilement. So now, with that in mind, the first approach taken by the Gemara is basically a suggestion that the Shulchan, because it has to be permanently positioned where it is, it shouldn't be subject to Kabbalah's Tumah. And if that would have been the case, there would be no need to warn the Amorites, don't touch it. Even if they do touch it, even after the holiday, it's not going to be Tameh, because it's not subject to Kabbalah's Tumah, based on it being a Kli Eitz Ha'Asui Lenachas. The inverted triangle we see later on represents an approach like our Mishnah of Kabbalas Tuma, Shetekabel Tuma Mishumat Sipui, Afilu Im Hu Asui Lenachas. Even if you have a wooden vessel that's made for permanent positioning, once it's coated with metal, it should be Mekabel Tuma. Okay, our hope is that we're simply exposing ourselves to these ideas, and it'll make it a little easier when we go into the Gemara itself. So let's do that right now with a question, long question. It's a suggestion. V'tepukli, regarding the Shulchan, even if Amaratzim touch it, it should not be Mekabel Tuma. D'kli Eitz Ha'Asui L'Nachas Hu. It's a wooden vessel. The table, technically speaking, was the core of the table, the basis of the table was wood. It was coated with gold, but its basis is wood, so it's a wooden vessel that is made for permanent positioning, to be remain in one place. And all wooden vessels that are made for permanent positioning do not absorb tuma. My taima, and why is that? Dumya de sakboinon. In order for a vessel to mekabel tuma, it has to be like sack, which is mentioned in the pasuk. And Rashi, by the way, quotes the pasuk. You can take advantage of Rashi and see how sack and eitz appear in the same pasuk. Ma sack metata molivarekam, just like sack material or vessels made out of sack material, sackcloth, which is a woven goat hair, is something by its very nature, very definition, is movable, not only when it's empty, but when it's mole as well. Af kol metata molivrekum. So to any other vessel made of the material specified in the pasuk, must be that kind of vessel that's movable, whether it's empty or even if it's full. Movable, though, is a characteristic that's upon which Kabbalah's Tum is predicated. Movable, though, is not a characteristic of the Shulchan. At least that's what we think right now. The Gemara reveals that the Shulchan itself is actually made for moving purposes. It's not like a large permanent chest of drawers or cabinet or display case that you never move. Not so with regard to the Shulchan. Hai nami metate mole verekam hu. The Shulchan is something that's moved not only if it were empty, but even if it's full with the breads on it. The Reish Lakish, based on Reish Lakish's teaching, note by the way that this is a long section of Gemara, is all part of a long answer. The Reish Lakish says, Mai dichtiv al ha-shulchan ha-tahor. The pasuk describes the breads being on the pure table, the non-defiled table, by saying that the table is tahor, michlal shu tamei. That implies that there is a potential for it to become tamei. V'amai, why would the table be described as something with the potential of becoming tamei? Kli eitz ha'asui lenachas hu v'eino mekabel tuma. Is it not a vessel made of wood, but for non-movement purposes, and as a result, it would not mekabel tuma, it wouldn't absorb tuma? Hello, rather, the fact that this posuk says that it's a shulchan tor, it teaches us, this teaches us, shemagbien oisoi, the table with the bread on it would be lifted up, umarin boi le'oile regolim lechem aponim. Thrice annually, the table with the breads on it would be taken from its specific spot in the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash and brought to the door, the entranceway of the Heichal. It wasn't taken outside into the courtyard, but it was brought to the doorway of the Heichal with the breads on it, the Omrim Lohem, and the public would be shown, Re'u Chibaschem Lifnei HaMokom, behold the endearment in which you are held in the eyes of Mokom, of the Almighty. Siluko Kesidura, what the people saw, they were able to perceive that the bread, even after sitting on the table for a week's time, for a week, a whole week, the bread was still fresh, like the day on which it was baked. So for bread to remain fresh, without all kinds of additives, and certainly exposed to the air, to remain fresh for an entire week is something that we call miraculous. And the public was shown this. And they were told, they were shown that siluko kesiduro, that upon its removal, siluko means its removal, the bread was changed every Shabbos. And it was distributed amongst the kohanim that were serving in the Beis HaMikdash, as the Gemara features at the end of Maseches Sukkah. So it was removed in a state kesiduro, as it was when it was initially set up a week before. The Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, Neis Godol, Naaseh B'lechem Aponim, a great miracle took place regarding the showbreads. Kesiduro came kach siluko, as when it was set up on the table. Every Shabbos, the Kohanim would set up freshly baked breads on the table. They were baked on Friday, so they were still fresh when it came to Shabbos. They were set up on the table, and they remained in that same, at that same level of freshness, kach siluko, at the time of their removal. Shenemar lo sum lechem chom biyom hi lokcho, that it was bread that was placed, hot bread, fresh bread, placed on the table as it would be on the day that it was removed from the table. So all of this, basically, if we want to summarize the Gemara from the last triangle till this point, a suggestion had been raised that the Shulchan shouldn't be subject to Kabbalah's Tumah, and hence no need to warn the Amoratzim in the first place, because on the grounds that the Shulchan is a Kli Eitz HaOsui L'Nachas, that though it's made of wood, it's made for permanent positioning. The Gemara says it's not made for permanent positioning. The Shulchan was in fact moved thrice annually to show the public that the bread on the table was still fresh as it was on the day that it was placed there. The Gemara now asks a question. Note, this is a long question. The tapukli mishum tzipui. Here the Gemara is questioning. It's kind of as we said, in the opposite direction. Here we're trying to advance the idea that the table is certainly mekabel tuma, even if it were a kli eitz ha'osui l'nachas. According to the first approach, the triangle with the point facing up, we were trying to say, because it's kli eitz ha'osui l'nachas, it should not mekabel tuma. Here we're saying, even if you were to say it's a kli eitz ha'osui l'nachas, which it's not, but even if it were that, it should be able to mekabel tuma because of the tzipui, the covering, the coating, the metal that, in this case, gold, that covered the shulchan. We said before that the base of the shulchan, or the core material, was made of wood, but it was coated with gold. And because of the coating, that should be reason for Kabbalah's Tumah under all circumstances, even if it's a Kli Eitz HaOsui L'Nachas. Again, a long question. V'tepukli, we read in the Gemara, Mishum Tzipui, that because of the Tzipui, the coating, it should mekabel tuma, the table should mekabel tuma, even if it were made for permanent positioning. The Ha'atnan, we have the following source. It says, Hashulchani. Now, before we read this source, your mindset should be focused on coding, that the Kabbalah possibility or lack thereof is dependent on coding. And just another word of background, we've mentioned different materials that are subject to Kabbalah's Tumah. We mentioned wood, sackcloth, metal. There happened to be materials that are resilient to defilement. Those materials include stone, for example. So with that in mind, we read the following Tanaic source. Hashulchan v'adubaki, a table, a dubaki is another kind of vessel. Rashi says it's a folding, it's a chair that folds, and it's covered with leather. So Hashulchan v'adubaki, she nifchesu, oh, they developed a hole in them, oh, she chipon b'shayish, or they were coated with marble. Marble is a type of stone, and stone is not makabel tuma. So we have a table, and by the way, we didn't emphasize, but this source is not a Beis Hamikdash source per se. It's describing different furnishings, different vessels, table and a dubaki that were coated with marble. V'shi'er b'hemokam anochas kaisais, and you left a small part of the table that you now coated with marble. You have the small table, part of the wooden table, exposed. A place for placing cups. It's reminiscent of many things that we see today, where you have a surface that has a depression in it for being able to place a cup, so that even if there's movement or whatever, prevent it from spilling. But that is what we seem to see here as well, where you're coating the table with marble, and a spot is left uncoated, which in effect you'd have then a depression where the wood is exposed. So if he left a part of it exposed, tomei, it's subject to kabbalas tuma. Now, if he didn't leave a part exposed, it was completely covered with the shayish, with the marble, the marble coating would be the defining factor. And in that case, since it's marble form a type of stone, it would not be makabel tuma. So that the coating is mevatel, the base of the item. The coating is the defining factor. And if the coating is a defining factor for leniency, as is the case with stone being the coating, all the more so, you can rest assured that the coating would be a defining factor in the direction of stringency. What do we mean by that? Wood, true. There is the concept of kli eitza osu v'nachas, and we explained this at length before because of its presence in the verse together with sack, with sack. Metal, on the other hand, is not taught in the pasuk that featured wood and sack. Rashi, we advise people before to look at the Rashi, in which you see eitz and beged and or and sack. That you have wood, you have fabrics, leather, and sack, the goat hair material. Those are the materials that are taught together. Metal doesn't appear in that pasuk. So metal is not subject to the osu l'nachas restriction. Metal will always makabel tuma, even if it's made for permanent positioning. So if you have a vessel coated in metal, and we're saying that the coating is the definer of the vessel vis-a-vis kabbalas tuma, if you have a wooden vessel, even if it's a large vessel, and it's also lenachas, but if it's coated with metal, it will certainly then be defined by its metal covering, which leads us in the direction of stringency, namely, kabbalas tuma under all circumstances. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in this Tanaic source, he says, Mokom hanochas hachatichos. The Tanakhama mentioned if there's left exposed a place for cups. Here he says if there is a place left exposed for placing pieces of probably pieces of meat. We don't have to focus right now on on the seeming machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama, but both are in agreement that if you have a vessel that's completely coated, we define the vessel in terms of its tumah possibilities by the coating, when it's a complete coating. You can see a double underline that appears here and a few lines later on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh, the structural note. The expression V'chi Tema is highlighted. These are Nisyonos Liyashev Mekoros Tanoim, attempts to resolve Tanaic sources. Mosai Koivim Tuma Mishum Tzipui. When do we establish Tuma based Tuma or lack thereof? And it was Tuma standards based on the coating. O Masai Lo Elo Mishum De'enos Linachas. When do we not pay attention to the coating, but rather emphasize the stationary or portability of the item? According to the Mishnah, we were not emphasizing the coating. We were emphasizing portability. According to this suggestion, we are emphasizing the coding. We continue. V'chitema, you might say, shiny atse shitim the chashivi. The wood used in the fashioning of the Beis Hamikdash vessels was called shitim, a type of wood. So you might say that atse shitim the chashivi, they are of, that type of wood is very significant. Nowadays, people associate mahogany as a type of very expensive, significant type of wood. So, atse shitim is that type of significant wood that, because of its exceptional importance, v'lo batli, the wood status would not become subservient or voided in the face of the coating. The wood status would be maintained, and as a result, we would focus on the standards that apply to wood. Is it osui lenachas or is it not osui lenachas? In other words, that osui lenachas factor remains important. Ha nicha l'reish lakish. You can explain our Mishnah in those terms, according to Reish Lakish, the Omar, lo shanu elo bekli ach salgim haboim mides hayam. The teaching, lo shanu elo, means the teaching that the tzipui, that the coating is mevatel. We saw that in the Tanaic source five lines above from here, with the Shulchan and the Dufiki, where the tzipui was the defining factor. So Reish Lakish qualifies that and says that the tzipui is a defining factor when you're dealing with kli ach salgim. It's a type of wood that's not significant. It's imported wood that comes from abroad. It's not significant. Aval bekli mismim lo batli, but vessels made of mismim, it's another kind of material. There we say that the wood, the mismim wood, would not be botel. Shapir. Shapir means, then we understand very well that the shulchan, even though it's coated, still has a wooden standard. And hence the need for warning the Amaratzim not to touch it, because of it being a kli eitz that's not osui lenachas. Again, we're applying the standard, the wood standard, and hence, since it's osui lenachas, since it's not osui lenachas, it would be mekabel tumah. But had it been osui lenachas, even though it's coated with metal, it would not mekabel tumah because of its wood, because of the significance of its wood. So, defining a vessel in terms of its wood significance level is something that Reish Lakish subscribes to. Elo la Reb Yochanan, diomar afilu bekli mismim nami batli. According to Reb Yochanan, that says that even with regard to the kli mismim, the wood element. Kli mitzvim is something, as we said, is choshev. That even with regard to this expensive type of wood, the wood status is botel. It becomes, it's voided, it's negated, it's subservient to the coating. Mai ikar lemeimar. Then how would you explain the Mishnah's approach in light of Rabbi Yochanan's approach? According to Rabbi Yochanan, we always follow the coding. And as a result, even if it were not osui, even if it were osui lenachas, it would still makabel tuma. So to reiterate, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we have his opinion that vessels, wooden vessels, if they're coated, are always defined by the coating. And when you're dealing with something coated in metal, it will always be makabel tuma. So according to that, the coating, the metal coating is the reason for kabbalas tuma. But we learned before that with regard to the Shulchan, its Kabbalas Tuma is based on the fact that it's Metaltel Mole Vareikon. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, when does Metaltel Mole Vareikon going to figure as the reason for the Kabbalas Tuma? V'chi Teima, we continue in trying to resolve the two reasons for Kabbalas Tuma according to Rabbi Yochanan. V'chi Teima kan b'tzipui oimeid, kan b'tzipui she'eno oimeid. You might want to make a distinction between a tzipui that's omeid. It's a coating that's firmly fastened to the wood base. That is what we say that the tzipui is the overriding factor. Tzipui she'eno omeid, it's not firmly fastened. And we would then say that the shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash gold coating wasn't firmly fastened. So then the tzipui would not be the defining factor for Kabbalas Tuma. Maybe you would want to make a distinction like that. Well, let's check that out according to Rabbi Yochanan. Ha, ba, mine reish lochishim Rabbi Yochanan. This issue, though, was raised as a question of Reish Lakish posed to Rabbi Yochanan, b'tzipui oimeid o b'tzipui she'eno oimeid. That you say that the tzipui is the defining factor, is that only when it's a permanent, well-fastened tzipui, or even if not? B'chofes levoz vizov o b'she'eno chofes levoz vizov. Is the coating the defining factor only when it covers the levozvas of the rim of the edges and the rim of the vessel, or even if it doesn't? The Omarle, and Rabbi Yochanan answers Reish Lakish, and here we have to emphasize it's Rabbi Yochanan responding, lo shno b'tzipui oimeid v'lo shno b'tzipui she'eno oimeid. We make no distinctions whether it's firmly fastened or not. Lo shno b'choyfe es levoz vizov v'lo shno b'eino choyfe es levoz vizov. Nor do we make any distinction whether it covers the rim or not. We always go according to the tzipui. If that's the case, so why is there any significance to defining the Shulchan as Mekabel Tuma by virtue of the fact that it's Metata Mole Vareikon? You don't need that reason whatsoever. And yet, we said before, seems to be something everyone agrees with, that the Pasuk said it's a Shulchan Ator, indicating that it's subject to Kabbalas Tuma by virtue of the fact that it's Metata Mole Vareikon. The Gemara answers, Elo Shaini Shulchan. The case of the Shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash, in fact, is different. We're continuing at the top of Daf Chof Zayin Amud Aleph, the top line, the Rachmona Karya Eitz. The Torah calls it wood, even coated. it's still called wood. So the Torah is proclaiming this is a wood vessel, and that means that only the wood standard will apply, even though it's coated. So it's a gezeres hakosuv. It's a Torah ruling that supersedes the general rule that Rabbi Yochanan advanced, that vessels are defined by their coating. Dechsiv, and we quote a pasuk. The pasuk is four lines. Hamizbeach eight sholosh amos gavoya. The orkos shtayim amos. The altar is made of wood. It's three amos in height. Its length is two amos. Mitzoisov loy vi orkoi vekiroisov eitz vayedaber elize hashulchan asher lifnei Hashem. You see that we've dashed underline the opening word hamizbeach and the closing of the pasuk says, and this is the table that sits in front of Hashem. It's a very odd pasuk. Pasach b'mizbeach v'siyim b'shulchan. It opens with the mizbeach as if it's describing the mizbeach, and then it says, "This is the table." Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish dami travayu. Both Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish resolve this phenomenon or this presentation in the pasuk of it. The two words. They both say bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim, when the beis hamikdash is around, when it's standing, when it's extant, mizbeach mechaper al adam. The altar was the source of atonement for a person. People would bring sacrifices in hopes of achieving atonement. Sacrifices were offered on the mizbeach. Achshav, nowadays, shulchanei shel adam mechaper olav. The table, one's table at home, is his potential source of atonement. Rashi on the top line says, Shulchan mechaper olav b'achnosas orchim, through the kiyum of the mitzvah of inviting wayfarers to partake of their meals through your hosting of them. So the table becomes the basis of atonement. So the pasuk, there's no contradiction in the pasuk. Both the mizbeach and the shulchan are in effect one in the same. They are sources of atonement, though at different periods in time. So as we look at this sukkah and we focus on Shitas Rabbi Yochanan, Shitas Rabbi Yochanan would then state that in general, no matter what the significance of the wood in question, even if it's very expensive, significant wood, it's coated with another material, the coating is the defining factor regarding the Kabbalah's Tumah. An exception to that is the table of the Beis Hamikdash, though it was coated with gold. Nevertheless, its wood status is emphasized, as we saw in the pasuk in Yechezkel. And as a result, in order to explain the Kabbalah's Tumah of the Shulchan in the Beis Hamikdash, we have to say it is Mekabel Tumah by virtue of the fact that it's metate mole v'rekon, and it's not a kli eitz ha'osui l'nachas. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.